our approach, we actually don't even use the term marketing internally because we really don't believe in pushing people to do things or being manipulative to get them to buy something.
Hey there, and welcome to Up Next in Commerce, the top podcast for e-commerce insights, where we get to hear from executives leading the charge at the most innovative Fortune 500 companies, to the fastest growing startups today, and everything in between. I'm Stephanie Postles, CEO of Mission.org. If you're well-versed in the beauty space, you may look at Deciem and think, this looks like a very different type of beauty brand. It's because it is. Deciem is a company behind global powerhouses like The Ordinary, and it's more focused on education than manipulation. On today's episode, we talk with Jordan Dyke, Deciem's digital director, all about acquisitions, global expansion, and how they've taken the skincare world by storm, simply by telling it like it is. Enjoy today's episode. What are business leaders thinking about when they aren't winning at business? Family, travel, the latest TV show? Yes, and maybe. But how about quirky business opportunities or little discussed financial trends or maybe even plant medicine benefits and alternative wellness? Mission Daily is back, baby, and our flagship podcast is better than ever. Mission Daily is the podcast for the business builder, the thoughtful marketer, the team manager, the blue-collar worker looking for new ways to think about life, finances, and health. This is for the people who want to break the status quo and laugh a little or a lot along the way. Join me, Stephanie Postles, and my co-host, Albert Chow, as we address the subjects, thoughts, and trends that business leaders think about but don't often talk about. Tune into Mission Daily wherever you listen to your podcasts. See you there. Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super stoked. I already knew it would be a good fit when I found out one of your cat's names was Avocado. So it's pretty clear we're going to get along great when you're naming animals after food. So thanks for joining me. I'm really excited to hear all about what you're up to at Deciem. But first, I want to go back in history a bit because you've had a lot of very interesting roles. You've worked at a lot of places when it comes to the e-com world. And I wanted to hear a bit about you and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go to school for like digital or anything like that because it wasn't even an option. I went to school for marketing and I kind of was like teetering between like an analytical brain and like a creative side of my brain. And so then I kind of like, as I was getting into jobs throughout my schooling, I stumbled upon some jobs that were a bit more on the analytical side. And I liked that part of it, I think, because I liked being able to quantify things. And then being in the marketing space as well kind of helped expose me a bit to the digital side of things. And I was like, oh, like, it's cool. Like, I can pair this digital side of things with this quantifying of data and understanding like what's working and what's not. And so that's kind of what initially steered me in that direction. And then was fortunate enough to get in through to some cool jobs through co-op positions in school that exposed me to a bunch of different verticals. So I was able to touch on everything from fashion to online grocery, which at the time was really up and coming and a net new kind of industry in Canada, and then eventually ended up in a beauty related industry position. And then that's how I kind of hopped over to Deciem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tell me a bit about Deciem. I mean, I kind of already have a bit of context because we did have the CEO of The Ordinary. He came on maybe a few months ago. So I have a little bit of context, but for anyone who doesn't know, can you give an overview of what Deciem is?
Sure. Yeah. So Deciem is an umbrella company of beauty brands. We're kind of like an incubator of innovation in the beauty space. Our most popular brand that most people are familiar with is The Ordinary. And that's really what propelled a lot of our growth as a company. And we recently, I think it was around this time last year, we had a big purchase through Estee Lauder. So over the next 3 years, they'll be taking over full control or ownership of the company. And so we're really excited about that partnership because it opens up a lot of resources on both sides. And I think like it's fun because we're learning from them and they're learning from us. And there's a lot of exposure to different lines of business and different brands and stuff that we can tap into and be better.
That's awesome. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of interesting stories going on when a big company comes and purchases you. And I want to also hear, I mean, you just mentioned earlier before we were recording that, you know, you all just undertook a big digital transformation. And I'm thinking, okay, then Estee Lauder comes in and, you know, buys you guys. Do you have to do another one? And what's that like?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're fortunate because like our culture is very agile and flexible and quite young, I would say, too. And that's allowed us to be really comfortable, I think, in a space where historically in this industry, it's been quite rigid and like there's a certain way of doing things. And so I think that's in part why Estee Lauder bought us, to be honest, is to learn from us on that side of things. And so, you know, I think there was some fear kind of going into it internally that like they're going to come in, they're going to change us, they're going to make us all these like corporate robots and stuff. And like, that is like the complete opposite of our culture. And pleasantly surprised, I would say, so far, in that like they're actually very humble, and their culture aligns a lot closer to ours than we initially expected. And it's really formed this great partnership. And so, yeah, I mean, I think our digital transformation in particular was something that we knew we had to do. We came from a place where we were this small startup, started the company in 2013. And at the time, there was no like Shopify or, you know, easy like plug-in solutions for startups that really made sense financially. And our founder also had a background in program engineering. And so it just made sense. Like, we'll just build everything ourselves and it will be cheaper and we can customize it and make it whatever we want. And then over the course of the years, we started to go viral and explode. And all of a sudden, this small startup's like, oh my God, how do we like manage all of the things that we need to add to this platform? And how do we scale and grow and be able to support this behemoth of a business that we've like stumbled upon with the systems that we have? And they served us so well for so long. So I think it was a hard decision to make, but ultimately we decided that, you know, it's time for us to move to something different. So we actually invested into the Salesforce ecosystem with Commerce Cloud, Service Cloud, and Marketing Cloud across the board. And that's really allowed us to scale a lot faster and not have to worry about, you know, if the site's going to crash tomorrow, Are we going to have people available to like fix it and stuff like that? Because like the stability of the platform is there. And that allows us to then think about other cool things like, you know, let's build live shopping on our site, or, you know, what's the next big thing in e-commerce that we can do and really allow us to, you know, do what we do best, which is innovate and think outside of the box.
Mm-hmm. Were there any features that you were really excited about when you were moving over to Salesforce ecosystem that, other than just having a stable environment, which is key, like you said, when you're growing quickly and you have a lot of interest, you can't just have your website crashing. So other than like the foundational piece, were there any features that really pulled you over to that platform?
I mean, I think one of the really great things about Salesforce's ecosystem is their background in CRM. And we kind of recognize that, you know, what we really want to set ourselves apart is, you know, the unique experiences that we can bring to people. And what better way to do that through communication with your customers. And so that was a really great basis to give us. And we knew that with that, we would have all of the tools to share the data that we're collecting in all of these different sources and put it into a way that will allow us to really tap into that and do some really cool things and, you know, personalize and segment and, you know, not think about our customers as like one single person that we're talking to, but like talk to everybody individually. So that was a big part of it. And then I think, you know, like we, having everything built in house, we didn't have a lot of like fundamental tools, like a content management system or like, you know, a promo engine and things like that, that like you just kind of think are really standard today. But at the time before we moved over, it was really overwhelming because we want to do a lot of these cool, innovative things. And our teams are really great at like forward thinking and trying to do the next big thing and be ahead of the curve. But it was so hard to move in that direction when like we couldn't even like update an image on our website easily.
Yeah, I feel those struggles. I feel like updating our website right now has been like a multi-year process and little things that have taken like way longer. And you're like, oh my gosh, I just want the clarity of this image to be better. That's all I'm asking, people. Mm-hmm. But that's awesome. So I want to hear about, you know, you mentioned the marketing angle, and it was really interesting looking at Deciem's website and seeing, you know, the way that you go about marketing the products and how, okay, these products are not coming from marketers. They're coming from scientists who, you know, really care about the ingredients and all that. And I want to hear how you use that approach, you know, on all channels, because it's definitely unique. And I feel like it hit home so quickly for me where I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's like one of the things that kind of disrupted the industry is the way we talk about our products. And really what we, in how we develop new products and everything, it starts with the lab. Like it really comes down to the ingredients. It comes down to the science behind how these products come together. And I think like where that all really stemmed from and what kind of sparked The Ordinary was our founder, who he, before starting Deciem and a few other beauty startups before we kind of landed on the gem that was The Ordinary, had worked a bit in the beauty industry. And he was doing kind of financials. He could see some of the financials in the background of like these products. And he was like, this is such a ripoff. Like, you know, how are these big brands getting away with charging such huge prices for these products? And he could see like the raw ingredients and what they cost to go into it. And he was like, this is just not fair. And so that was kind of the basis of what he thought of when he built Deciem, was to bring that transparency and integrity to the beauty industry. And so, you know, you'll notice in The Ordinary line, for example, the products are actually like the names of the products are actually the ingredients and the concentration of that ingredient in them.
Yep.
And that was a big game changer in the industry. And we started to see copycats and some of these big brands that are now doing that. And it's been both a blessing and a curse, I think, because it's not only disrupted the industry, but it's also been a lot of education. And I think those fundamental people, we call them skintellectuals, that they're a group of people
like
that kind of started with us from the very beginning. Like they're people that are really passionate about the skincare industry and kind of try, they're the people that try things out for the first time, tell all their friends about it. And that's really what started Deciem, like and The Ordinary success was these group of people trying everything. And they actually knew very well the ingredients that go into all these products. And we're like, oh, finally, I can buy some niacinamide and like, I know exactly what I'm buying. And oh, hey, it's only $6. And all of a sudden, we started to be able to have this narrative with people that didn't net, like if you go back, like, you know, even 5 years, if you talk to like, you know, an average skincare user, they wouldn't know what hyaluronic acid was. And now, you know, there's still a lot of a ways to go, I think, but like, it's great to see people recognizing those types of things a lot more and understanding like what ingredients do and why I would want to use them on my skin.
Yep. Yep. I love that. I mean, how did you approach it how do you think about this now when it comes to, you know, you've got this one audience who is, you know, avid fans, probably they want to know all the ingredients, like they walk into a store and they're like, oh yeah, I just need that one ingredient. And like, very educated in the beauty market. And then you probably have the others, maybe closer to me sometimes, where it's like, oh, I'm used to, you know, I just know this brand maybe, or I know my dermatologist just said, go and get this one. Like, have you been approaching those two segments to like really educate someone like me that is used to probably the marketing messages and the brands and like, oh, you just need this three-step process. Don't worry about what's in it. Like, how do you go after someone like me?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, first of all, like our approach, we actually don't even use the term marketing internally because we really don't believe in like pushing people to do things or like, you know, being manipulative to get them to buy something. And it's real, like, so where the way we kind of approach things is how can we be educational? How can we add value to solve problems that people are looking to solve? And what you're describing is this, this kind of balance of how do you communicate with this intellectual versus like, you know, maybe the newbie, let's call them. It's a balancing act, because I think what we don't want to do is alienate one group by talking to the other. And so having a lot of content that's focused on education throughout the experience that we have is a part of that fundamental. And you know, like if I think about, you know, what differentiates buying on Deciem.com versus buying our same product on Sephora.com. It's the communication and connection that you have with our brand and the experience that we're able to give you through our DTC experience that you wouldn't be able to experience to the same level if you were to buy on some of those bigger beauty sites. And so, you know, I think what we like to do is like layer in messaging. Like we don't like to dumb things down. We don't want people to feel like, you know, we're just cutting out the meat of it just so like you can understand it. But we do recognize like there's a certain element of accessibility to that. And, you know, I think there what we've been trying to balance is that right level so that we can give the skintellectuals that meat that they like, while also giving in a way that if you're not a scientist, you could still understand it.
Yep.
So it's kind of what, I mean, ultimately what we'd love to move towards is a more dynamic website where we can tailor that content and message on the site to those different groups. It's a journey that we're on. So right now it's kind of, you know, having both types of content in one place. But I think with the evolution of the e-commerce industry and the technology that's becoming available, those are the types of things that that we'll be able to do more and really resonate better with different groups of people.
Yeah. Okay. So this will be a side question now, but I'm wondering, like, what are your favorite Deciem products? What do you use? You use them best. And, you know, I'm like, I need a new routine. So tell me what you got.
Well, it's interesting. Like, I actually, before starting at Deciem, could not tell you the first thing about anything skincare. And so I came in, I was like, you know, one of those newbies. And I was like, I can't even pronounce half the things that I'm supposed to talk about in my initiatives. And so thankfully, I was able to kind of educate myself through a lot of the content that we have available, and landed on, for me, niacinamide.
Okay.
Is a really great serum that I use daily, and it's great for minimizing the congestion on your face. And I have like a really oily complexion, and I suffer from acne. It doesn't solve acne, but it definitely helps kind of like reduce the amount of oil on my face that I know is kind of a contributing factor to that. And then hyaluronic acid is my like second go-to, especially right now. It's like really, really dry in Toronto, and I'm just like slathering my face with it all the time because it is a great hydrator.
Mm. All right, good. I wrote both of them down, so now I know. That's awesome. Okay, now back into the commerce piece. Tell me how you all are thinking about retail. Like, what are you rolling out over the next couple of years, or how are you betting on it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I take a step back a bit, like, we're a global company, and the way we've been able to really start to resonate in different areas, and the way we kind of first build awareness in a region is through our retailer partnerships. So whether it's Sephora or Ulta or, you know, I forget actually right now the name of the Mexican one that we just expanded into, but like that's our first foray into there. And yeah, we have our e-commerce kind of delivering everywhere, but it's hard to build that awareness when you're not, you know, there and more prominent in the beauty industry there. So that's really our like the first kind of tiptoe into that. And those partnerships that we have are really great for, you know, putting investment towards our brand that we maybe weren't able to do had they have the resources there. Like right now we don't have a team in Mexico, right? So to be able to tap into a team over there that it believes in us and is going to be able to put resources behind our brand is really awesome. So that's from a like partnership perspective, that's how we kind of first approach things. And then from there, we look at from a DTC perspective, okay, you know, where are the areas that we see the most amount of growth? And we work really closely with marketing partners like Google, who are able to tell us, you know, where are people searching for The Ordinary the most? And we can see through our e-commerce, like where there's up and coming growth of sales and stuff like that. And even traffic on our website, for example, you know, we have a ton of traffic coming to our site in India. And we're like, oh, like, wouldn't it be great if like we invested the resources to like grow there? So like that, those kind of give us the building blocks. And then we do some more thorough analysis to kind of understand, okay, you know, then what does it take to really, you know, build an experience that's going to resonate for those different groups.
Hey there, are you enjoying the show so far? Well, imagine your company's advertising placed right in this very spot during a future interview with another elite e-commerce mind. Imagine your messaging and logo directly connected to the industry's most prominent innovators and thought leaders, distributed across every major podcast platform and social network. Yeah, well, it's time to stop imagining. Learn how you can partner with UpNext in Commerce and sponsor this very show. Reach out to me at stephanie@mission.org and let's have a conversation. Are there any surprising trends that you see happening right now where, you know, maybe it's from the search traffic, maybe it's from people visiting your website, like anything that's kind of surprising you right now?
Well, I mean, I think our whole team was really surprised when, and we didn't, it was interesting because we received this as like secondhand knowledge from one of our partners, Look Fantastic in the UK. And they had done an analysis and had done an interesting study that illuminated that we were the top search, our AHA BHA product for The Ordinary was the top searched beauty product in, and I'm going to like butcher the number, but it was like a crazy amount of countries. And we're like, wow, that's so cool. And then that just like sparks a lot of like, you know, oh, we're doing the right things. Like, what else can we do? How can we do this again? Like, it's really fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I'm sure everyone listening who has a company is like, well, how do I get other countries looking for my, you know, product? So like, was there anything that was happening behind the scenes that you feel like drove that, you know, searchability to where you had a big uptick, you know, from searches from India? Like, how was that happening? I'm guessing there had to be something going on to like drive that interest.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really comes back to our differentiating factors as a brand, which is like the high quality of our products. First of all, like it's like the products speak for themselves. So it's like you don't even have to do much. You just need to get somebody to try it, and all of a sudden, like they're hooked, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the price is so accessible that, you know, you're not really breaking the bank to try that product. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, for the AHA BHA product, it's got some interesting features to it. Like it's this like really dark red color and you like put it on your face and you like peel it off. So like it presents really well. So I think that was maybe a little part of like what made it interesting. And the big piece for that one that really solidified its growth was TikTok. It's because I think it was so interesting, and all, like the fact that it's a great product and the fact that like you can show like a cool video and stuff with it on your face through TikTok, it would just like exploded. Yeah. And then we just had all of these different areas and groups that, as they're kind of discovering TikTok, really, really started getting introduced to our brand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was Decium created that, those types of videos. It wasn't user created though, right?
No. Yeah. No, it was all user generated.
Oh, got it. Okay. Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. I'm like, that's even better if you've got users posting those videos that you can't take your eyes off of.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's awesome. Are there any other platforms that you guys are excited about right now? I mean, TikTok to me seems like a very obvious one for your brand and also like the presentation of the products. I mean, The Ordinary always comes to mind for me because every time I go into Ulta or like they're always there and I'm always like, oh yeah, they stand out well. Are there any other platforms that you guys are investing in or trying out right now?
I mean, we're always trying and looking at trends and where people are. And I think like, you know, as we start to think about like who we want our customer base to be, or like who, like where is their opportunity for our brand? Like if I think about, for example, you know, the fact that our brand is unisex is something that I don't think a lot of people realize. And so often we'll get people like males ask us like, oh, I see that you got all these products, but like, do you have anything for men? And we're like, well, it's all for men. It like, you know, it's skin. So you can use all of it the same way that, you know.
Yeah. Like our skin is so different.
Yeah, exactly. So I think like, you know, that's an audience that there's an opportunity for us to do a bit more education and talking to. And so it's not so much about like, you know, being in the next big platform, because I think, you know, those opportunities come and go, but also like where are those audiences?
Yep.
And you know, the audience that is prominently in the platforms that we're in today might not be the ones that might not be where the opportunity is for us to reach new groups of people and educate new groups of people that have never heard about us.
Yep. So earlier you mentioned live shopping, which kind of ties into this. I want to hear, you know, how you guys are maybe experimenting with that. Is it working? And yeah, I want to hear some details on that.
Yeah, we haven't experimented with it yet, but it's like top of mind for us. And we see a lot of opportunity there. I like to keep an eye on the stuff that's happening in the Asian market, whether it's China or like South Korea, because I find like they're usually like 3 to 5 years ahead of us in terms of the things that they're doing. And the level of which it's ingrained in what they do.
Especially beauty.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, there was a trend that we see becoming more and more prominent coming over to the more Western world is, you know, and we actually, the first time we kind of realized like how big it could be, and the fact that we kind of wanted to investigate it a bit more was, we sell on Tmall in China, and they facilitated some live shopping events for us out there, and it exploded. Like it was like in a matter of like a couple hours, the amount of excitement and engagement with our brand was like unseen. And we're like, wow, if we can do that in like an hour in China, where we don't have as much visibility and we're still kind of growing and establishing our brand, imagine what we could do in North America.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, that'll be exciting to see how you guys kind of play in that arena eventually. And yeah, I think tests like that are so interesting to be able to see. I mean, we watched, there was this video where this professor was showing, okay, here's what live shopping can do. And they did it on the screen and they sold out of this item in like 2 minutes or something wild. And I feel like that was the video that always, you know, got shipped around to people to be like, here's what is possible. And shopping can just be done in a very different way, depending on where you are, which is to figure out what are those methods and how do you connect with those, you know, different users and customers.
Yeah. And it's a really great medium for our brand in general, because it aligns really well with how we, that education piece of our brand, and, you know, really being able to like have more of a human connection on a broader scale with our customers, it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So I want to hear now, what are you most excited about over the next couple years? It can be personal. We can talk about your new house. We can talk about your cats. We can talk about work, whatever you want, wherever you want it to go. But what are you most excited for and looking forward to?
I would not say I'm like a crypto geek. Like, I know some people are like really invested in that, but I'm like kind of cautiously invested on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly where it's going to go. But this whole like, you know, crypto, like Web3 stuff going on, even with like, you know, Facebook's like metaverse stuff, like, I don't know. It seems like really abstract right now, but I think some of it's going to end up sticking over the next like 5 to 10 years. And I'm excited to kind of see how that evolves commerce, e-commerce and, you know, methods of payment, the way we transfer information, privacy laws, things like that. Like, I think I'm really, really looking forward to kind of seeing how that goes. And I'm also hoping from an investment point of view that I put some of my money in the right place.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you did. I mean, I feel like if you just get a little bit of something everywhere, one of them has to do well, right?
Yeah. I know, right? Like my in-laws are like cringe inside because they're like accountants and very adverse to risk. So they're like, how could you can't put your money in that. It's too volatile.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that too. Back in 2011, I was working at Fannie Mae, which is like a mortgage company here, like government type of mortgage company. And I remember telling the chief economist that, you know, I think blockchain was going to be really important for mortgages in the future and tapping into that and Bitcoin. And I remember he was just like, that's such a scam. Don't be silly, Stephanie. Don't ever like, let's go actually work on the paper, the housing paper that you're supposed to be working on. And so that day I went and bought a couple Bitcoin because I was like, you know what? I'm going to show you, dude. And my parents, even up until like now, were like, no, you need to sell it. You need to get rid of it. Like, you shouldn't have ever done that. I mean, it was such a contentious issue where it's like, you know, why are you hating it when you don't understand it? But I've definitely seen that same kind of opinions. And my thought is ignore them all. That's what I did.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I did.
There you go. It's working out great for us. All right, Jordan, with thinking about digital transformation, I think it'd actually be fun to do a quick lightning round.
Let's do it. Let's do it up.
All right. First question. You have a minute or less to answer. What is the worst advice you received when going through the transformation?
I think we spent a lot of time on how we would categorize our products in the new system that we were building. And we had a lot of emphasis on like trying to make one product fit into only one category. And what I've learned since is that that really doesn't matter. At the time I was told like that it's like a big SEO faux pas to have it in like a product be in multiple places or like to have like different ways of categorizing a product on the same website. I remember thinking at the time, like, well, Sephora has like, you know, their cuts by concern or by like, you know, their makeup stuff or ingredients. The person I got that information for was my mentor. I was like, okay, and I've never done this before. You must be right. What I learned is that it really doesn't matter. And actually having all of the different cuts that I identified that would be cool to have, would actually have made our experience a lot better from a customer perspective.
That's a good one. Yep. That's great. Okay. Next up, what kept you up at night? What were you most worried about throughout the process?
I was most worried about the speed at which we were moving, because as a product manager, it's important to think about all of the different scenarios and how everything that you're doing impacts everything else and all the different systems and, you know, scenario edge case of this, of customer doing X, Y, and Z. And it's really important to move fast when you're doing digital transformation, because if you don't, and if you go through, let's say, you know, like a 2-year digital transformation, by the time you finish implementing that solution, it's going to be obsolete because technology moves that fast. And so for me, I had a hard time kind of balancing the speed of which we were moving with being able to think through like all of the different pieces of this like bullet train that we were headed down. And so we had to make some concessions and like didn't have the time to think through as thoroughly all of the different pieces. But I think, you know, we sacrifice speed, I think, for quality in some respects. But the great thing about digital is that you can continually iterate. So we put out our MVP and, you know, continued to make it better from there.
Yep. Yep. All right. What was the biggest surprise throughout the experience?
I would say the biggest surprise that I had was how important change management is to a digital transformation. And also, like, I guess one of the things, like, as I was like trying to get myself up to speed with digital transformation heading into it, you read a lot about like these three pillars of technology, process, and people, and that all three of those things are fundamental to digital transformation. And conceptually, it makes sense. And you're like, yeah. But like once you get into it, you just get so focused in on the technology part that you kind of forget about those other two things. And I think that kind of like circles back into like the change management piece of it, because we kind of, I think, forgot a bit about those two other, like the people in the process bit. And so it's like, we were like technology wise ready to launch. And then all of a sudden we launched in like our, we call them like our customer happiness team. They're like our customer service team. And they're like, I don't know what to do here. Like, I didn't have enough training to understand this. Like, you know, even like things like, you know, merchandising products on the back end, like we didn't spend enough time teaching our teams internally how to use these great new tools. And even now, I think we're still learning them a bit because there's just so much there.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. And the last one, what would be one piece of advice that you would give to anyone who is considering this path?
If you're going to be going through a digital transformation that touches on a website, do not forget to have a very intricate plan for SEO transition, because it can make or break your brand. We've learned some of this the hard way, and it's really hard to, I would say, like, make sure that you work with a partner, whether it's an agency or you have somebody internal that's like an SEO whiz, that can help guide you through that process and have like a really clear plan of how you're going to transition URLs and make sure that all of the great traffic and clout that you've built with the brand and website that you have today is able to transfer over to the new solution that you build.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now I'm curious, how do you make sure it transfers over? I mean, I'm sure it's like 1,000 little pieces, but how do you actually do that?
It is. I am no SEO. Like, I mean, I know, you know, SEO to a certain degree, but like, I would not profess to be an SEO expert. But there's like a lot of things that we hadn't thought about, like, you know, all of the different versions of URLs that we were going to have for all of the regions that we're in. And how do you make sure that the right version of that URL for, let's say, AHA, BHA, our AHA, BHA product, when I'm searching in the UK, how do I make sure that version of the product page shows up when somebody searches on Google? It's hard to like think about, but like there are really important pieces to making sure that you can still get the traffic that you need going to your site.
That's great. Okay. That was awesome. All right. Well, with that, Jordan, thank you so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure having you on. Where can people learn more about you?
They can reach me on LinkedIn, Jordan Dick. Pretty easy to find. I've got a cat in my profile picture, so that will be your tell.
It was an easy tell. I was like, there's Jordan. All right. I know where I can start our conversation off with. It's amazing. Thanks so much, Jordan.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Hey, listeners. Thanks for tuning into this episode. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. It helps spread the word, and I would greatly appreciate it. See you next time. Thank you for checking out another epic hour of business insights and inspiration on the Up Next in Commerce podcast. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in partnering with us to bring your brand to a growing audience of e-commerce experts, reach out to me at stephanie@mission.org to get the conversation started.